Hi, I'm Hal Eisner, and welcome to What the How. Here in Los Angeles, we've been having conversations for a long time about body cameras with police officers. Josh Rubenstein has been a TV personality for many years in this town until he stepped out of that career and became a public information director for the LAPD. In this episode, we talk about Josh's career and the controversy around police body cams. So, tell me, Josh.
Yeah.
I want to talk about body cameras and police officers, but first I want to talk about you.
Okay.
You came out of broadcasting.
Yep.
I just found out that, like me, you spent many years in radio. Let's talk about that. Tell me about your radio background.
I started out when I was in college at the college radio station at the University of Illinois in Champaign, Illinois. That was my first experience in news, and I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the technology. I fell in love with news as being the firsthand, being the guy in the know. Went on to be a DJ and did some more news on radio for about 3 years before I made that transition to television.
So you did music also?
I did music.
How'd you like that?
Oh, spinning the tunes?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I could hit a post. I was playing the hits. Loved it. Absolutely. Yeah. And I had the best call letters, WLRW.
Oh, wow.
And you say W, not
yeah. W. That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were basically in... What states?
Illinois.
That's right. Illinois.
I grew up in Chicago. Went to the University of Illinois. Worked for my first jobs in Central Illinois, and then got my first real meaty, journalist job in Rockford, Illinois.
And then you went to television
as a TV reporter in Rockford.
Yeah, how'd that work?
So it was. What was funny is I was working in radio and I was a DJ, and the station changed formats. And as you know, when a station changed formats, they fire everybody. And we all got let go. And in the meantime, I had made a demo tape of me doing news and sent it off to a TV station in Rockford. And just coincidentally, right after that had happened, they called and said, hey, we're looking for a weekend weather anchor and a weekday reporter. Are you interested? We'll train you. So I said, okay, I'll come on up there. And they trained me how to do the weather. I already had my background in communications from the University of Illinois, and ended up getting my first job, being a journalist, being the Rock County Bureau reporter.
So, wow.
Yeah. It was pretty
cool. Yeah. So for people in Southern California, the name Josh Rubenstein, I'm sure, is familiar. You spent how many years on television?
20 years. So 25 years in broadcasting, 20 years at KCAL first. So I came here in 1996 and got a job after a short stint as a production assistant on Boy Meets World. But then got a job at KCAL being a writer and eventually getting on the air over there as the meteorologist over there.
Now, I want to move toward the police conversation because you always had an interest in police and law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. So in television, and especially as a weather anchor and meteorologist, we put our image and our powers towards things in the community and being a part of the community. And I'm a big believer in law enforcement. I had many friends in law enforcement. I'm also the guy who stands at the corner and telling everybody to slow down my street. So I'm that guy.
And you honk at the people on the freeway that are texting while they're
exactly
driving.
Yeah, come on. I'm the guy.
Yeah.
And so I had already a connection with the Los Angeles Police Department and had a true affection for folks that worked there and the mission, vision, and value of that department.
So you made this change from broadcasting to being a public information director for the Los Angeles Police Department. And how's that worked?
The transition? I have to say, it's a culture shift. It's a midlife career shift. It has been one of the biggest challenges of my life, but probably one of the most rewarding challenges of my life. It is something that I am proud that I did, something that I'm still learning at every single day, but truly one of the joys.
One of the things that's interesting, Josh, not only did weather, is a meteorologist, but also did news reporting on the street. Mm-hmm. And you were out there in some of these protests and things that we've all covered. And you saw sort of policing from one perspective, and that was a perspective of the community.
Right.
Now you're on that other side.
Mm-hmm.
What thoughts go through your mind now on the other side?
Well, I feel very fortunate to be able to see both perspectives. And I bring my journalistic integrity and journalism discipline to the Los Angeles Police Department. So I ask questions that a journalist would ask of my peers and my superiors.
So you stand up to authority?
I do. Yeah. I mean, and it's welcomed. You know, I am so fortunate to have worked for Chief Beck and for now Chief Moore, two people who not only do I respect and like, but also who welcome my questioning and who welcome my input. And I think I have to tell you, that's something I think I was missing in television.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know that I had, you know how the business is.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here in a TV station, so but I do have the perspective of both sides. And I do know that in many ways, television is a churn 'em and burn 'em kind of industry. And it is for the young. And I know that there are seasoned reporters like yourself that, you know, we are reminded.
I'm still young.
You're still young. I said seasoned.
Yeah.
We're reminded that there are about 1,000 people behind us who want that job. Right?
That's true.
And I think in many ways that diminishes your value because they can say to you at any minute, hey, look, I can find someone prettier, cheaper, you know, to fill in for your spot. You come over to work for the Los Angeles Police Department, and that's not a mentality that's there. And they value my input. They value my questioning. They value my background. And that was a refreshing change, I have to say. And while I've loved, I really am so blessed to have two careers in my life. And I loved working on television. I loved CBS and KK.
Well, you were great at it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate
it.
Yeah,
you were. If you said it was going to rain, I said it probably wasn't.
See, I go from one maligned profession to another. No, but I'm so fortunate that I'm in a career where I can still be proud of myself at the end of the day and be respect what I do.
So let's move into body cams. Yeah. This has been an interesting conversation for a long time, just getting body cams was a very difficult thing. And for those who aren't from here, why don't you kind of lay that out for us?
Well, so, I mean, it's been, we got our body worn cameras quite a while ago, a couple of years ago. So we always knew that that this was going to be a conversation we were going to have. But keep in mind, body worn cameras are there to hold officers accountable. I know that the first notion that the public has is we want to see it and it's transparency. But really the ultimate is you want to hold an officer accountable. You want to be able to hold them accountable for the work that they do, that they are staying within policy, that they are staying within the bounds of the law, that they are staying within the bounds of constitutional policing. That's what a body worn, really the value of a body worn camera. It is also not, there's a notion that it is the panacea, it is the thing that's gonna fix everything or that we're gonna know everything. And in many cases, that's not necessarily true.
Have you had situations where officers have been in the crosshairs and their video has been reviewed to determine if they did something outside of a shooting that was inappropriate or whatever?
Yeah, very, very valuable.
Does that happen frequently?
I don't have the numbers, so I don't know how frequently or infrequently it happens, but I do know that it happens a lot, that we do see reports of insubordination or violations of policy that when the cameras, we look and review the camera, that's not necessarily true.
Now, you know, interesting thing, and this really is an aside, but, you know, we're remembering this Chatsworth train collision that happened 10 years ago. And one of the outcomes of that was that they put an outbound and an inward camera.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't so much that you could see what was going on in the locomotive with the engineer. It was to be a deterrent, sort of to hold the engineer accountable. So if you did do something you shouldn't be doing, like texting or whatever, it would be recorded and you would know it was going to be recorded and you would be in trouble if almost like a black box if it came out after the fact that you had done something you shouldn't have done. Is that what you're talking about? That it's also a deterrent to wear this camera because it may catch you in the act of doing something wrong?
Well, you're being watched. You're being scrutinized for what you do. And while I know it's difficult, nobody would want to go through a profession. I know you probably would not want to have a camera on you all day long.
Well, I have a smartphone.
Following along, right? It's not. You can turn on and off your smartphone.
Yeah.
This is something that by policy, a police officer, when they're having an enforcement or investigative action with the public, they have to turn it
can
on.
They
cannot turn it off if they're still in the middle of the investigative or enforcement action.
I see. And so
they can turn it off if they're not. So they're finished with the investigative action or the enforcement action.
What would happen if they turned it off while they were in the middle of an action?
It'd be a violation of policy. They would be subject to discipline.
So let's move into the area of violence and abusive force. And you've been releasing now videos that show what's happened in a particular instance. And I think there have been, what, maybe 15 of these videos?
At least 15.
And there'll be more. And they seem to be coming out with some frequency.
Well, unfortunately, so the policy, according to our policy, any significant use of force, what we call a critical incident, which would be an officer-involved shooting, an in-custody death where there is some use of force before that in-custody death, or a law enforcement-related injury where someone ends up being hospitalized.
And so you package these in a way that I know you've said give them context. Mm-hmm. But that very packaging of these sort of things, almost like news stories on television, as you would have done when you were working on television,
right,
has been the focus of criticism by some, that it's like a PR piece or it's too slick, or if it's edited, what are they not showing us?
Right. Well, and that's a question. And I understand the public's desire to get all that information, and I understand the questioning behind it. And I don't have a problem with
what aren't you showing us?
What we're not showing is nothing. Are things that don't have anything to do with the use of force, because by policy we're showing you the use of force, and we take great pains to really show the use of force.
And who makes that decision where the end point is and where the out point is in the video in the use of force?
Well, that is done really by committee and many eyes on this particular piece. It starts off at officers that we've come up with a framework of what it is after we have gone through talked to the investigators and said, hey, Tom, what happened? Give me the timeline. And then we put it there, given the video that we have. We see the video we have. We see the 911 calls, the radio broadcasts, any other evidence that we have. And we put it all together. And we do a first shot at it and say, here's what we think we want to put out. We give that to the inspector general. We give the sort of the outline, the framework. So this is that the inspector general, a third party who is there to keep us honest. And that individual, the inspector general's office, will tell us you are not being fair this way or not being fair this way. We want to be factually correct and middle of the road. We don't want to taint the suspect. We don't want to taint an officer. We don't want to do anything that's going to lean it one way or the other. We really want to say what happened.
Are you using your television writing skills to write these, or is
Absolutely.
Somebody else writing them?
So we have an officer who writes them, and then I overlook them and then rework them a little bit and then give them to the inspector general so that we are being honest and true to what the story is or what factually happened. Then the chief will look at it as well, and he'll sign off on it. So there are many eyes on it to make sure that we are being fair and impartial in the middle of the road on it.
Do you have a studio, or are you using computer software like Final Cut Pro?
We use Premiere Pro, I believe is what they're using, and some that use Final Cut and some that use Premiere Pro. I'm fortunate to have officers that are incredibly skilled. This is what you're going to find, and I'm going to be on a tangent for a second.
That's okay.
What you're going to find are LAPD officers have so many different skills, right? And one of the things that me as public information director would love the world to know is that police officers, they're like all of us, right? They have hobbies. They have other things. They are human beings that care very much about their jobs. They care very much about the city. They care about doing the right thing. And I am fortunate to have a couple of officers, two or three officers, who are really adept at editing, and I would say at video production. I would put them up against any professional that we have, and I've worked in the business for a long time. I know the professionals. They are that good, and this is something they love to do, and they have been able to marry one of the things that they love to do as a hobby with their profession.
You've heard the criticism, mm-hmm. though. You've heard these sort of things that I've mentioned, and what do you say to those people, that say, well, it's just a nice PR piece. Well, it's really slickly edited. Well, as opposed to just putting out raw video.
Well, thank you for saying it's slickly edited, because that means it's done well.
Well,
but I don't mean
– I said
I
the
know
people
they
that say,
it. Say no.
Right.
What I would say, and I know what they're saying, and I know that they think that we're washing it over. And that's not the case.
But I think you're trying to tell a good story on behalf of the police to make the police look
no,
good.
No, I'm actually not. And I would push back on that, because we're not there. I'm not there to tell a story about the good police officers. There are stories that are good. There are officers that are facing bullets flying in their faces, literally. One of these videos that we did. And they are heroic. There are officers who are driving through the streets, maintaining composure while suspects are firing on them. These are officers. There's an officer who opens up the door and is fired on right away. These are officers who are doing amazing work in the field facing unbelievable circumstances, difficult, unbelievable circumstances. I'm not shaping that. That's the truth. And just because I'm putting it in a, and I'm serving it up in something that looks nice, that has some graphics on it, that that may have someone explaining what's happening, doesn't mean that I'm shaping the story or telling them something different. I'm trying to be factually correct. I'm trying to bring, as I said, that journalist background to it. I'm trying to be honest. I made a commitment that I would be honest in this job, and I'm sticking to it.
And those graphics you talk about, there are pieces like the history of somebody and the crimes that they have been accused or convicted of committing. Why is it important to put that in? Because oftentimes, you know, there's always concern about making a jury pool tainted, and sometimes that's even a way of getting a mistrial or getting a case kicked out of a city to another city. Are you potentially doing that?
No. Well, we are not in the business of setting up for trial. You know, I'm not. That's not what that's about. We are giving out information that's public information. It's part of the California Public Records Act, and that information is what you guys call for when you ask about a suspect. So that, furthermore, we don't put it out when it is absolutely irrelevant to the shooting.
So you've given a lot of thought to these videos. Some attorney in some courtroom isn't going to turn that around and push back on you.
Absolutely, absolutely, and that's what an attorney's job is. But keep in mind that an attorney's job is to create a case, create doubt, create questions, and that's what they're going to do. That doesn't make it true. And again, our goal is to be factually correct. Factually correct along the way. We're not saying anything that is not true. We're not saying this. And in fact, to the point where we're trying not to put superlatives in the script, you know, quickly, very, you know, things where we're trying to make it sound like the officer or the suspect did something extraordinary or in a good or bad way.
If people want to see these videos, where do they go?
They go to our YouTube page. There's an LAPD YouTube page. And then if you want to go right to the website, lapdonline.org, one of the tabs is use of force. Click on it. And there's actually a matrix of every single officer-involved shooting that we've had since this policy started. And actually, even before that, with this information, you can click on it. And there is the news release. There is the video, if there is one.
And is there anything else you want to say about that? Because I know we've talked about the fact this is a work in progress, and as you see things that need to be changed, you'll change them.
Yeah.
But anything else you want to say about these body cameras?
You know, no, I think, again, it's a learning experience. You know, my goal is not to create a story. You know, that's very important to me. And not just me, a whole team, because it's not me, just me. It is a team of public information officers and my video editors, supervisors, chiefs that are looking over this, the inspector general. This is a collaborative process, and we are all looking it through.
And lawyers too, right?
And the city attorney, city attorney looks at it to make sure that we are being factually correct and not, you know, jeopardizing a case. And it's not done lightly, and it's not done as a PR piece. That really is not what we're doing. We know this is something we have to do. We have to release this video. By order of the police commission.
Right.
Yeah, after 45 days. And it's at the very beginning of the investigation. We don't know a whole lot. But what we do know, we want to share. And we want to give context. And I don't think that's a bad thing. And I think it's being looked at as a bad thing.
Are other cities doing this?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Same way, though?
In fact, we pattern ours loosely off of what Las Vegas does. Las Vegas does a press conference. And it's a sunshine state, so they have to release video. Within 3 days, they release raw video. But then they do that raw video in the context of a press conference and giving out a lot of the same information that we would give out, too.
Why don't you do it that way?
First of all, we have a lot of them, and we'd be doing press conferences. I mean, we had 40-some officer-involved shootings last year. We're up at 15 already. I mean, it's the volume. It's a lot, and it's a lot to do a press conference.
So it's easier to package it.
It's easier to do it. And some of these are, some of these are law enforcement-related injuries where we have to do a video on it. Is that going to be worthy of putting a press conference together, that kind of thing? I mean, honestly, it is more volume than anything.
There's one other thing I want to ask you about. First of all, thanks for being on this podcast.
Sure.
And you have a podcast.
I do have a podcast, yes.
Tell me about it.
LAPD pod. It's actually, I thought it was pretty creative in coming up with this. The Big L, Big A, Pig, Big P, small O, big D, right? Ooh. LA podcast.
Yeah,
right?
There you go. That's clever.
You know what?
I thought What the Hell was pretty good, actually.
I do like What the Hell. I think that's pretty good. Anytime I can say What the Hell. You know what? It is a way. I wanted to do something where I could prove to people that I am trying to be fair, and I am going to ask some tough questions. And I have people on. I had Chief Grimala on and asked her some tough questions about drones when we passed the policy to use drones in certain situations, certain tactical situations. I know that it was extremely controversial and extremely sensitive topic for the public. And I wanted to be able to ask some of the questions that I know that a Hal Eisner would ask.
Nah.
Because I want people to understand that that while it seems like it's a big PR show, you got the weatherman working for LAPD. That's not my heart. My heart is to tell the truth. I do believe in this organization. Also, I know that that we make mistakes, and we have officers that have made mistakes. And I am proud of an organization that says, "Guess what? We messed up." And I have bosses, I have chiefs that I work for and have worked for, who will say, stand in front of a camera and stand alone and say, "I own this. I own the mistake that the organization has made or that this individual has made, and I stand by."
How long have you had the job?
2 years. My two-year anniversary was 2 weeks ago.
Seems like 2 weeks.
It seems like 10 years. What are you talking about?
But you know what? For everybody, this is the first time that Josh has sat down with somebody and talked about his life with the LAPD, and the first time that he's shared some of the things you're listening to right now, and I really appreciate it because I think it's interesting. You talk about context. I think it's interesting to get some context to what you do on behalf of the police department and the things that we see on the news and how that all gets generated. And any final thoughts you want to share?
No, I appreciate having me on. I have such a great respect for you and so many of the journalists in Los Angeles and how fortunate I am to be able to get to know you this way, as opposed to just the standing by you at a police station.
It's nice to see you on the other side of the microphone. My thanks to Josh, and I want to thank you for listening. If you haven't subscribed yet, you can certainly do that in your podcast app. We appreciate any ratings, too, so give us a few stars if you can. Until next time, see you later.